It's Colorado Matters from CPR News. I'm Ryan Warner. Retirement can be scary for some people who fear they won't know what to do with themselves. That is not the case for three people we're going to meet today, who are 82, 92, and 102. In fact, it's hard to say that some of them have retired at all. Don M. Forrest, the 82-year-old, was an architect, first in New York, then Denver, but that only satisfied his creative impulses to a point. Painting fulfilled the rest. It's something he can still do and does.
If you enjoy painting and you let your imagination go, there's no limitation. You're not trying to satisfy other people. You're not trying to satisfy a market. You're painting for simply the love of painting.
In Forrest's case, it might be of buffalo against a fiery red backdrop, or of a lake that looks like it's filled with wildflowers. He's also picked up writing, penning a novel about an architect who's hit by a truck and becomes a master painter. The truck part is not autobiographical, fortunately. We learned of Forrest when we asked through our Public Insight Network for examples of exceptional seniors, part of our aging series. We're getting insight into their longevity. For Forrest, it's being able to indulge his imagination. And you could say the same of sculptor Dorothy Tanner, whose work is best seen in the dark. That's because she works with light and plexiglass. She's been making art for more than 60 years. With her late husband, Mel Tanner, she added sound and music, creating a psychedelic experience they called Lumonics. That concept later found a home in trippy dance parties at a theater the couple opened in Miami. She now lives in Westminster, and an exhibition of her work is on through the end of the month at the Lakewood Cultural Center. At 92, Dorothy Tanner tells me she's never seriously considered retiring.
I mostly like playing with stuff, so why should I stop?
But I suppose in that way it's never felt purely like work. It's felt like play as well.
Well, no, that's really not true. Once you become interested in something, seriously interested, it's no longer just play. It involves you totally. And I think that's as much as what compels you to continue as just playing around. You're satisfying a couple of parts of yourself that need to be activated.
What are those parts? So there's the play part, but what are the...
The play part is the virtual part. There's the intellectual part that I would rather not talk about.
Well, let's talk about the spiritual then. I can imagine working with light and sound having something of a heavenly quality or...
Exactly. Certainly working with sound is spiritual. And light is wonderful. It brings in a totally other dimension to a... here and now object.
Do you get tired?
Do I get tired?
Yeah, when you're working on a piece.
Sometimes, yes.
And what do you tell yourself when you are tired about continuing?
Go lie down for a bit. Take a break. Take a walk. Smoke a joint.
You've been involved with art since you were about 17 or 18.
Yeah, more seriously, I was 27, 28.
And you were in New York around that time.
Yeah, abstract expressionism had flourished.
Well, and you drew, I imagine, some inspiration from that, because your pieces are deconstructed.
The freedom that it allowed, it was mind-boggling. You know, from representational work to David Smith and this guy Ferber, there were people working with metal. I worked with metal early on. I went through the traditional media like clay and wood and stone. And, you know, I had to go through all of it. I had to experience it. Before I finally settled on, of all things, plexiglass.
Plexiglass, right. What was it about plexiglass that caught
color,
your
color? I wanted color in the sculpture. And although the wood is lovely with its grain and so on, it didn't have color in the sense that I wanted it, and I didn't want to paint. What's so great about light is you bring a particular light to an object that is a color, and you change the color, and you don't know what the outcome will be.
Speaking of light, your work later grew to be called and involve something called lumonics.
Yeah.
But this was not just a name for an art form. It was like a whole idea that you brought when you moved to Florida, the Miami area. What was lumonics?
It evolved. It was born in Miami, actually.
Mm.
It means light and sound experience. We were influenced by the mentality of the 60s, which opened up music, and as it opened up the visual arts, and it combined music and light and color, and we utilized the sculptures, the lighted sculptures, to reflect the music. Mel was a painter at the time, and so we did projections on a 30-foot wall, which were paintings, and then we overlaid the paintings with lasers.
And you opened up eventually like a series of theaters in which this would occur.
Yeah, yeah. We moved to California, and from there, one of our people had a place in Maine. We moved to a bank building in Maine and converted it to a lumonic space.
And describe the one that you opened. Was it in Miami?
The idea was to change people's consciousness when they walked in the door. They walked in the door, there was a spacey fountain. They turned the corner, and there was this large room. And the whole room had light sculptures in it.
Is it true that they made it into, like, dance parties in Miami and clubs?
Later on, with the help of Mark.
This is Mark Billard.
Yes. He and I collaborated on music and video.
Why don't we hear some of that music?
It started to get too popular. And it was, by the way, during a period when ecstasy was happening with the kids. The authorities, they made it illegal and so on.
Were you raided?
Finally, yes. We didn't handle any of it. We weren't there to make money on drugs.
What eventually led you to Denver?
I think it was enough, really, of that kind of density, the too many palm trees, too much heat. There were probably other reasons, maybe even more practical reasons. This place has a history of Naropa, a different kind of thinking. And legalization was an important element in assessing what the mentality is.
Legalization of marijuana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, let's talk about your current exhibition, Creatures from Left Field. It's running now through the end of the month at the Lakewood Cultural Center. And you say it's a departure from a lot of your previous work. How so?
It involves recognizable creature type things, whereas mostly I've worked totally in the abstract.
Why did you want to do form?
I didn't want to. They just wanted to get done. Now and again, does a Jabberwocky or a mooselet, whatever a mooselet is.
A mooselet?
A mooselet. Why not?
A little moose, I guess that?
Well,
I like it.
Exactly.
Just because they're forms doesn't mean they can't be fantastical.
Exactly.
What advice would you have for up-and-coming artists?
Enjoy yourself if you can. Nothing else.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Light and sound sculptor Dorothy Tanner. Her show, Creatures from Left Field, runs through June 30th at the Lakewood Cultural Center. So we've heard from an 82-year-old artist, a 92-year-old one, and now a 102-year-old poet, Lois Haina. She's a recipient of the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Colorado Authors League. She lived in Colorado Springs before moving last year to be with her granddaughter in Michigan. We asked Haina to read a poem for us, but because her eyesight is failing, she opted to recite something from memory.
Last Will and Testament. I am busy with deciding who of my inheritors should get which of my worldly goods when an angel taps me on the shoulder and says, "Time to go." Almost instantly, I feel lighter and a little unsteady. It's clear that wings will take some getting used to. They shift my balance even as they fledge, and they open astonishingly fast. Just before takeoff, I tuck my laptop under the lengthening feathers of my left wing. With all eternity on my hands, those glittery streets and endless vistas may turn boring. I might even settle in and finish that novel.